This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 238 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Max, there's sunlight on and we're recording. What's wrong with this?
We have two guests from UL to talk about a certification called UL 3030. Now, UL is a global safety consulting and certification company that was established in 1894. UL was previously a nonprofit organization known as Underwriters Laboratories, but the company transformed in 2012 into the for-profit company named UL. They're a limited liability company. Now, UL has been developing a new certification called UL 3030 to help prevent safety incidents involving lithium-ion batteries in drones. And with us to talk about the development of UL 3030 and what this means for the industry are two UL experts. We have Ken Boyce. He's Principal Engineer Director for UL's Energy and Power Technologies. And we also have Ibrahim Jelani. He's UL Business Development Manager. Now, by way of introduction, Ken has decades of experience in safety engineering across many sectors. Most recently, he served as UL's technical leader for the energy and power sectors, overseeing global standards development and technical operations for renewable energy technologies, battery and energy storage systems, advanced technology grid infrastructure, electric vehicle systems, power distribution, factory automation, and related equipment. Ken, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Well, thank you, Max and David. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you today.
Now, we also have Ibrahim Jelani. He is a UL Business Development Manager. He has over 12 years of experience running high-value projects in battery and energy storage technology. He leads UL globally in technical services for OEMs and systems integrators for stationary battery and energy storage systems. He also addresses global industry matters such as advisory, due diligence, evaluation, testing, and certification. Ibrahim, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Thank you, Max and David. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to a really interesting conversation, but maybe we can frame this a little bit for our audience and talk about what are some of the safety issues associated with lithium-ion batteries in drones?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'll say, just to build on some of the points you made earlier, Max, we are at UL a safety science company. We're really focused on safe working and living environments on a global scale. And we actually both work, Ibrahim and I, in UL LLC, which is a limited liability company. It's wholly owned by our not-for-profit parent company, UL Inc., which is solely focused on that public safety mission. And so we have that unwavering commitment to say, how can we use science and technology and engineering to help support safe innovation and bring all these wonderful new ideas into a safe and sustainable deployment for people around the world? And a lot of that is really focused on battery technology. It's such an interesting time because we see so much advancement in battery technology being used to drive portable equipment, certainly advanced intelligence and electronics being embedded into so many more products. We're seeing autonomous vehicles and applications that are really driving into new ways of accomplishing things. And at the heart of all that tends to be battery technology, because it can be small. Lithium ion technologies are very energy dense. They pack a lot of energy in a small footprint. And it's really a great way to support this technology being used in new ways. But it really does also require that there's real thought put into this, the design and the testing and the assessment of those technologies to make sure they're safe from safety vulnerabilities that can cause fires or explosions.
And specifically with respect to drones, are there unique considerations from a safety standpoint?
Certainly. I mean, I think we've actually built out a whole suite of battery standards to cover different types of batteries dating all the way back to the 1980s when lithium-ion batteries were first being developed. But we've also built out a big suite of standards to address different applications, different battery-powered applications. And one recent example that I think probably a lot of people had some familiarity with was the hoverboard problems that occurred several holiday seasons ago when there was this rush to deploy this new technology, battery-powered hoverboards that everybody wanted as the number one toy that Christmas, and there were a rash of fires and explosions that caused some horrific incidents around the world because that battery safety was not addressed the right way. And so UL had really worked quickly to develop a safety standard. We developed a program. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission pointed to compliance with our requirements, and it really changed the safety of that whole hoverboard deployment in a very positive way. And we took that concept and really extrapolated it to the drone and UAV type application. Right, Ibrahim?
That's correct. Ken said it really well. The point is that the battery operated end products, they're a system, and that system is made up of the lithium battery cell. Then that cell is put into a pack. That pack is combined with the battery management system circuit board. That board is connected into a larger system that controls motors, that controls different features of end product devices. And the end product itself has safety considerations to be considered. So you tie that product along with its charger and other features that might bring other elements into the system. UL philosophy and approach is to take a holistic system level approach to look at a product. And in the case of drones and UAVs, we have developed that through the UL 3030 standard.
And maybe talk a little bit about the scope of the UL 3030 standard. Does it apply to only certain categories of UAVs? What can you tell us about the applicability, the scope of the standard?
Yeah, so the standard is focused on around commercial unmanned aerial aircraft systems. So the type of drone that would be used for a commercial purpose. It looks for battery-operated drones. So right now we're honed in on that particular aspect of drones. In the future, we may expand into other technology choices like a fuel cell technology, but currently it does not address that. Battery-operated drones, the reason why we looked at that is because it is closely aligned to what happened with the hoverboards. You know, the hoverboards covered, they were being produced, and in less than 2 months, 60 fires happened in the United States. Out of those 60 fires, 3 homes burned down. Later on, through some of the statistics that CPSC published, we also learned that 200 drones have caused fire incidences. Out of those 200, over 50% happened while it was charging. So that tells us that there was electrical system issues. And so once we were kind of midstream with everything, the work going on for certifying a number of personal e-mobility devices, namely the hoverboards. And so there was work that we did to publish UL 3030. It's an important milestone for safety. Even last year, there was a event that took place with one of the manufacturer's drones that had to have an emergency firmware update last September. And that firmware update was to prevent a battery overheating issue that could have resulted in a widespread crisis similar to the hoverboards. So we are seeing that there is a need for the standard. There is a need for safety and third-party due diligence through a company like UL to verify, validate, and ultimately certify the equipment meeting the standard.
So I guess my next question for you both is, how do you get the buy-in from the companies? And then a follow-on question we could go into is, how do you communicate that out to someone who just got their DJI Phantom Christmas morning and really doesn't understand the potential of a lithium ion battery?
Yeah, those are great questions. So I think at first it's important to really think about standards, right? And they're really important elements of proactively addressing safety in the system. They are developed to leverage learnings about safety protocols and design principles. And that's really important to codify those, right? To write those down so that when products are being designed, those safety principles are right there to lay out those critical aspects that have to be addressed. And then it allows for testing to be done to prove that the products are actually safe. And ultimately, then the products can be certified, right, and bear the UL mark that everyone knows, UL in a circle. And that's a real confidence builder for the marketplace. So people can look for that mark and know that the product has been independently verified, as Ibrahim had said, for safety. Really, really important. I think the idea of taking all of those safety learnings then and really working closely with all the different stakeholders in the ecosystem that have a point of view on this, manufacturers, government regulators, academic experts, other experts in testing protocols and laboratory operations, the supply chain, all those people have a chance to contribute to the development of the requirements. And ultimately, those consensus requirements then are very powerful because it's a balanced group of people that come together and say, yes, this is the right way to assess the electrical system of an unmanned aerial vehicle for safety. Really, really important. And sometimes those standards, they get a little bit overlooked in the process, but they're really important in proactively addressing safety.
Hmm. So when we see something like UL 3030 being developed, it's not just something that UL alone develops. This is a process that includes other stakeholders in the industry. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, actually, so we do have dedicated safety experts that are very, very familiar and experienced in navigating these safety issues. But we really do reach out actively to engage that balanced group of stakeholders to ultimately publish the requirements in that consensus form and make sure that we have that proactively introduced into the marketplace. Really important.
Right. Ken, I think that is a great approach because not only do you end up with probably a better spec, a better requirement, but you've also got buy-in from the people who need to accept it in the end because they participated in the process.
That's right. Consensus, it's really hard work, but it's definitely worth the outcome.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it's easier. It can be easier to do it yourself, but like we're saying, it may not be as successful as is the case if you include a broader audience. So what are the requirements like in UL 3030? I mean, what would this have manufacturers do that may be different than what they've done in the past?
Some of the ways that UL 3030 differentiated itself or kind of looks at things is it really looks at that system approach, that the components within the system meet known safety standards, that the components come together in a way that's sensible in terms of electrical spacings, in terms of material properties. So some of those things, a lot of manufacturers in this world of UAVs have never really considered, or we've seen a number of them just haven't dawned on them in a way that other industries have embraced that kind of thought process and philosophy. So if you take into account like a laptop or even a microphone that you would use in a studio, all of those kind of products have a safety standard behind them. And then the components that build that system, even the internal guts of that product, the very simple safety switches like a fuse or some kind of a switching mechanism like a relay, all of those type of elements are looked at and have their way of being addressed. And when the whole system gets put together, then, you know, all the components meet a known standard. The system constructionally meets a standard. And then from a testing perspective, the tests are there to really check to make sure that if a foreseeable misuse was to happen, that the product would fail safely.
Yeah, so like Ibrahim said, we have construction requirements that talk about how you have to build the product. And we really try to be non-prescriptive in the way we address the outcomes. but we're really focused on mitigating those electrical shock and fire and explosion hazards and injury, personal injury hazards as well, as we look at the UAV electrical system, because UL 3030 is really focused on the electrical system. And then we have a whole testing regimen where we look at the performance of the product, right? We'll look at normal operation of the device to make sure internal components won't overheat the wiring or the batteries or other components that are inside the product. We'll look at abnormal conditions, right? So what if a capacitor shorts out, or what if a motor is prevented from rotating by some mechanical failure, and we'll make sure that those don't cascade to a large-scale fault. We certainly do a very intensive assessment of the battery system, right, looking at the charger and the cell and the battery management system and the battery pack and how that provides power to the load and all those different modes of operation to make sure that there won't be unsafe conditions there and that the batteries won't be put in an unsafe operating condition during charging or discharging that could lead to a thermal runaway condition that could cause a fire or explosion hazard. And then there's a whole set of physical tests, right? We look at vibration and impact and ingress, water ingress, to make sure that the physical abuses that the drone may be foreseen to encounter won't cause a safety hazard as well. And so it's really a comprehensive assessment of all those different aspects as it relates to that electrical system of the UAV.
Hmm. So do the manufacturers self-certify, or do they submit products to UL or to some other lab for testing? How does that process work?
Yeah, so we the true certification is done through a third-party certification granted, where it would say UL certified. Only UL can issue that. And basically then the manufacturer just reaches out, says, I'm interested. We walk them through how to get certified. A lot of that information is on ul.com/drones. And basically we go through a four phase process. Phase one would be a preliminary investigation where we are checking the early stage designs of a manufacturer's product, assuming that they still are in early stage design. If they've gone beyond early stage design and actually are headed towards production design or pretty much at production design, then we would go right to the formal construction review. That's phase two. Phase three is the actual testing, and phase four would be the final certification. But those four steps are the simplest way that we find that manufacturers who are new to certification can go through the process. The driver at this point, though, is voluntary. There is no mandate from either CPSC or FAA at this moment to say that drones should be certified to UL 3030. I do know, and one of the, it's a public fact, one of the STP members, one of the standard technical panel members for UL 3030 is the AA. So after the standard goes through its process of full vetting of the standard technical panel members and the national standard of the United States for battery-operated drones and battery-operated drone safety, which then at that point, FAA or CPSC may point to it as a mandate or a requirement. Also, certain retailers or other sellers of drones would point to it as well. A few manufacturers have, you know, understood the need and have taken part in other product environments, so they understand certification, they understand the need for it. So we will be announcing shortly one of the first certified drones, and we'll certainly send that over to the UAV Digest so that you guys can share that news as well when it's ready.
So I guess the follow-on question is, you set up the standards, so you get up 3030 and everyone approves it. How often do you go back and revise it? What would be the next steps going forward?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, so one of the exciting things about our standards development process is once it is published as a consensus standard, it's open for proposed revisions or changes by anybody at any time. And so that's an open-ended process that anybody who has information that maybe could result in an enhancement to the standard or a better way to deal with it, or even a way to accommodate new things. Like Ibrahim had mentioned, there's some interest in the UAV space on maybe using fuel cells more in the future, hydrogen fuel cells. There's an opportunity for us as UL or for anybody in the ecosystem to propose a change at any time And then that body of people that are involved in developing the standard look at each proposal and say, yes, this makes sense, or yes, I think this is good, but we need to, in my mind, to change A, B, and C. And everybody has a chance to collaborate then on what those changes would be. But it's constantly open for that kind of maintenance, which is great, because as we see new technologies rolled out into the field, there's a lot of really important learnings we get from the practical deployment, right? That we always say the world's a messy place, and we want to learn from that, right? To make sure that the requirements are as effective as possible and as flexible as possible to appropriately address those safety issues.
Sure. Ken, one topic that David and I have been discussing on another podcast we do on Airplane Geeks concerns electric airplanes. And that can range anywhere from in a plane like the Boeing 787 and some of the lithium-ion battery issues it's had. And more recently, we've been talking about smaller electric airplanes powered by electric power systems. But there are a lot of lithium-ion batteries used in those applications. And then additionally, we often see in the press issues about laptop battery fires, conversations about do you put laptops in the hold of an airplane? Do you carry them on board with you? What's the best way to handle that? So my point is there's a lot of conversation sort of out in the public about lithium-ion batteries. Now, maybe this is a little tangential to our conversation here on drones, but what can you say about the use of lithium-ion batteries in general in all these applications? Are we going down a road that's dangerous, or are there solutions to these that will ensure safety?
Yeah, it's a very important question, and one that there's a really a lot of attention being focused on, as there should be. Lithium-ion batteries are generally a very safe technology. The average failure rate is about 1 in 12 million, and they're a very effective battery technology because they do have that high energy density. They have a high rate of energy for a given volume. And so they're very effective in meeting the demands that we as consumers place on portable power, right? Or power that's built into certain applications, even like electric vehicles or electrified air transport. There's a lot of appeal for that. But we really do need to work collectively to make sure that those safety features are being addressed. And there is a vulnerability that's well established for lithium-ion batteries called thermal runaway. And that's where that electrochemistry that's associated with producing electricity in a battery gets out of control and it starts to get hot. And that actually accelerates the chemical interactions, which causes it to get hotter. And you have this self-perpetuating phenomenon that can lead to a catastrophic consequence. So when the amount of heat inside the battery exceeds what's being dissipated, you hit what's called thermal runaway, and that could lead that battery to burst into flames or explode. It can also induce thermal runaways in the batteries that are physically close to that cell.
Yes.
So you can have this cascading effect that can lead to a very large-scale problem. And we saw that with a number of those incidents you mentioned, including the Boeing Dreamliner. UL actually worked with the U.S. NTSB to help assess the failure mode of the batteries involved in those incidents with the Dreamliner to make sure that we've looked at the materials, we've looked at the battery management system, we've looked at the charging and discharge modes, and looked at that whole system very collectively and holistically to address those safety issues. And it's really important that we're thoughtful about that. We've also been doing quite a bit of interaction with all those different stakeholders and retailers and certainly the airlines, Ibrahim can talk about that, to help support the highest level of safety as we see more and more of these batteries integrated into our daily lives.
Well, I was just going to add that specific to the air carriers, passenger cargo or passenger carry-on. And as a result of that, yes, air carriers are acutely aware of the hazard it presents, and they are involving UL in that process to educate and familiarize themselves with what we call on-the-ground product safety standards in the past, they've only focused on what's in the air as being materials that are shipped, not so much as being product that's actually used or could be used in aircraft. So there is some discussions that you all are partaking in and providing our knowledge and our safety science, along with the work that we're doing with the UAV world and drone safety.
Well, David, I think this is very encouraging. I think we've got some folks, an organization, UL, that certainly has a lot of expertise in this area. And I love it that this is being applied to UAVs, small UAVs anyway, at this point, to try to bring a safer environment. This I really look forward to seeing UL markings on drones in the not too distant future. What do you think about this?
I think it's actually kind of fantastic. Growing up as a kid, UL, I was one of the few kids, because I had a father who was an engineer, that understood what UL meant. And we'd like to thank Heather for reaching out to us and having you guys come, because it is, lithium ion is something we talk about a lot. And as we start talking about future states of UAVs, larger ones, and our air taxis, definitely standardization is ultimately important, and safety standardization. So I hope that our listeners took some away from this, and we'll go out to ul.com/drones and check out what they're doing and take a little bit to learn about standardization and take some advice from them, because they know their stuff.
All right. Well, we're about out of time, so we want to thank our guests, Ken Boyce and Ibrahim Jalani from UL. Gentlemen, thanks so much for a great conversation. I think we could probably talk about this in more detail and go on for some time, but unfortunately, we'll have to wrap this up. But again, thanks so much for joining us on the UAV Digest.
Thank you, Max and David. It's been great to speak with you, and thank you so much for advancing awareness of safety in the drone space. It's great.
Fantastic.
Thank you all so much. Yes, thank you. This was great. I look forward to doing it again.
Yes, for sure. And when that first drone comes out with a UL mark on it, we want to be the first to know, or amongst the first to know. All right. Well, you've been listening to episode 238 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. If you'd like to go straight to the show notes for this episode, they're at the UAVDigest.com/238. And David, where can folks find us on social media?
You can find us on Twitter at UAVDigest, on Facebook at facebook.com/UAVDigest. You can leave us some feedback at feedback@theUAVDigest. Of course, we want you to be part of our Slack listener team, where you can have discussions and move on from all of this stuff we learn. And you can do that by sending us an invite to feedback@theUAVDigest. You can purchase some swag from us at our Cafe Press store. But most of all, we look forward to speaking to you next week. So with that, I'm going to say, this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.